So welcome everyone to our teleseminar titled Working with High School Boys. High school boys certainly present a different challenge for teachers, and this session today will provide educators with different methods for building relationships, increasing academic achievement, and preventing dropouts. During the call, if you have a question, please just email us at questions@ahaprocess.com. That's plural, questions with an S on the end, at ahaprocess.com, and I'll pose those to Vinny when we get to our question and answer time. I know everyone's time is valuable and limited, so I'll get right to introducing our speaker today. Vincent Segalini of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, has been an educator for 13 years. He's taught at all levels, from elementary to high school, in a variety of socioeconomic settings and in a number of different subject areas, from English and history to special ed, technology, and science. He has also served as assistant principal and lead teacher. And in the course of his career, Segalini has served as technology and science coordinator at the school and district level and as academic collaborative team leader. Vinny provides professional development to schools, groups, and conferences on a framework for understanding poverty, as well as Hear Our Cry, Boys in Crisis, and other topics. In addition to being a consultant for AHA Process, Segalini provides professional development on data-driven instruction, integrated curriculum, and effective strategies in the reading and language arts classroom. If you'd like more information on what Vinny's talking about today, please email us. You can still use the questions at ahaprocess.com, or you can call us at 800-424-9484. And as I said, Vinny is available for consulting and workshops at your school. So with that intro, Vinny, please take it away.
Thank you very much, and I hope you all are having a great Friday. I'm here in the sunny south, and in McGee, Mississippi is where I teach. We have about 80 degrees and beautiful, breezy blue skies, which is such a nice relief after our summer. I'm currently teaching high school English, English 2, which is a tested subject area in Mississippi, and this is my second year working at the high school level. Most of my experience prior to this year was at the upper elementary and middle schools. So when I came in last year to teach at the high school level, I wanted to look at my students. I wanted to look at trends in our school, but in high school education as a whole, and identify areas that I thought that I could really make a difference in. Now, I could look at all the data, all of our test scores and the such, but I think the biggest influence on me when I decided to really focus on my high school boys was just my classroom interaction with them. Many of them are in my community are coming from broken homes, from poverty, from different family situations that make it difficult for them to focus in school. They don't have the background, they don't have the knowledge or the support that they need. So when I came in as the English teacher last year, I said, this is the group that I'm going to focus on. I think I can do a lot with this group of boys, and so I focused on that. I also had the training, and I have the experience with the AHA Process program, Hear Our Cry, Boys in Crisis. So I said, let's take that information from the book and the program, and let's apply it in my classroom and see how it works. So it's been a process. It's been a long process, but I think we're just starting to see the boys making a turn, becoming academically inclined, becoming stronger students and school leaders, which is what we needed here at McGee High School and what students across the country need for their boys at the high school level to really strive to be the best that they can be. What we're going to talk about today is I'm going to give you some basic background information on how the male brain works, and for most of you understand that men and women are very different, and my wife can back that up if you want to give her a call and ask her, that our brains are just different. We're different people. And I want to focus on how we're different. And then we want to talk about the stereotypes of boys and the stereotypes of men and how that plays into what we do as teachers and how we interact with students. And then what I want you to get out of this session today is just things that I've done in the classroom, things that research supports are effective for working with our high school boys. Some of them are detailed, research-based. Some of them are things that I just do in my classroom every day that make a difference. And I think that practical experience is what I want you to take out of this session today so that you can go back and implement these in your schools and in your classrooms for our boys. Well, let's start with the brain. And when conception happens, it takes about 6 weeks before the fetus differentiates between a boy and a girl. They're pretty much, there's no difference in the fetus until 6 weeks. And at 6 weeks is when testosterone is injected into the fetus. And this is, if there's a lot of testosterone, if there's a presence of testosterone, then the fetus becomes a boy. If there's not, then it stays a girl. There is some research that there is higher levels of testosterone in certain boys and the fetus, and there's less so. However, the difference between the two is that injection of testosterone. So we begin there, and we see that that's the development of boys, but the brain of a boy develops different from that of a female. Men's brains have many single-function rooms, or male brains have many single-function rooms. If you ever notice your students or your spouse or males that you in your family, you'll see that they kind of get tunnel vision when it comes to something. They stay focused on one thing, and it's difficult for the male brain to do many different things at once. Female brains have multifaceted rooms. They still have rooms inside the brain, but you can move back and forth rather easily in the female brain, where the male brain, it's not as easy. The male brain is highly specialized, and we have a feeling room. And it's very difficult for the male to access the feeling room. If you ever get in an argument with your spouse, if you ever have a student in your class that is upset or belligerent or becomes angry, you'll see that they cannot communicate those feelings. If you have a child that's a boy, my son Jack is 7 years old, when he gets upset, he shuts down. And it's not because he cannot communicate his feelings, it just takes him a while to get into that feeling room. He needs to stop, he needs to unlock the door, he needs to go into the feeling room, see what's going on in there, come up with the words to express it, and then we can communicate with what's going on. With a female brain, that you can actually, it's easier to move from one room to the other. You don't have to take the time to unlock the door. You can move from immediately into the feeling room, access those feelings, and communicate them. One of the things that I see is that we immediately want our boys to tell us what's going on. What's going on in your brain? How are you feeling? What's wrong? And we do this with our children, we do this with our students, and we can do this with our spouses. So we ask, the boy is just not ready to communicate. It takes time for the boy to stop, think about it, unlock that door, and then they can communicate it. And we'll talk about some strategies to work with boys and help them express their feelings a little bit later in the session. Some other differences between the male and female brain. The men develop their gross motor skills earlier than females, while the females' fine motor skills develop more rapidly. Boys are, we want to play with trucks, we want to move things as children, we want big things that we can manipulate, where girls can use their fine motor skills to dress a doll, where a boy will simply pull the legs and arms off the doll and throw the doll around. It's not that he's violent, it's not that he is angry or has some ill will towards females, it's just that boys, that's what boys do. That's what his brain and his motor skills are allowing him to do at the time. You'll see as time moves on that they begin to develop those fine motor skills. It just takes a little bit longer. Another difference between the male and female brain is the men are more logical. We need proof before we can make a summation, before we can make a conclusion. We need proof. We need to think it through. We need to see the data. We need to see that what we're coming to a conclusion with makes sense, where a female is more intuitive. She feels it and therefore can make a decision or can move forward based on that intuition. The next part of men is the stereotyping of men, and this is where sometimes we have difficulty with our young boys, especially our high school boys. There's certain things we expect our boys to be, and it's societal, it's based on the past, it's based on how we are viewed on TV and in movies and in music, It's the stereotype that men need to be tough, the stereotype that big boys don't cry. And with this comes men not showing emotions, not being able to communicate. Men are pictured to be more aggressive. Now, this isn't for all men. This is a pattern. It's not definitive that every male is more aggressive or every man cannot communicate. It's just patterns based on observations. Men are pictured as fighters and lovers. We're protectors, but we're also sexually aggressive towards what we want. And another stereotype of men or boys is that we're not always as good students as females are. So when a child or a boy, and as they develop through school and as they develop in life and move on, they start seeing these and picking them up, and this is where they are gathering and building their persona. I'm going to go back to my son Jack again. My wife and I have always allowed him to cry if he needs to express his emotions. It doesn't make him a sissy. My dad was the old school, and if I was crying because I fell off my bike, I was a sissy, or I need to toughen up or rub some dirt on it and get back out there. But with my son, we've tried to allow him to express his emotions, express his feelings. If he's hurt, if he's sad and he wants to cry, then that's okay, and we talk about it. We try to not stereotype him, not to make him feel like that he cannot cry, that big boys don't cry. An example of that is we recently moved into a new house, and we closed on it about 2 weeks ago, and we went home and told my two children, Jack and Rain, and Jack started crying, and he said, "I am just so happy that we got a new house." And these are tears of joy, he said. And it's nice to see that. It's nice to have him be able to express his emotions in that way. But when many of our children are seeing guys on TV that are tough, that don't cry, or they're coming from the background like I did, where my dad said, "Don't be a sissy, toughen up, be a man," then that is what is expected of them. This is how they should act. The same with being fighters and lovers. This is what they see in life. I'm going to be the protector of my female. I'm going to be tough. I'm going to fight for what I want. If they are seeing this all the time, and that's what their role models are showing them, then that's what they define being a man as. So as teachers and educators, when we see these high school students, these high school boys come in and they have this attitude and they fall into that stereotype of big boys don't cry or it's a guy thing, we need to be the role models that show them that there's a different way to do it, that it is okay to show emotions, it is okay to communicate, it is okay to cry, because this makes our boys better fathers, better parents, better husbands, better leaders in the community. And that's really our aim. When I think about my boys in my class, I want them to be strong people, but I also want them to be good fathers. I want them to be good spouses. And that is my aim when I do the things that I do in my classroom. So where do our boys, especially our boys in poverty, get their persona? Where do they get their identity as a man? A lot of it comes from their family tree, their family structure. I grew up with a strong-willed, manly man as a father. A lot of our boys don't have a positive male role model as a father. There may be a grandfather, there may be an uncle, but there may not be that strong male father figure in the household. They see men in and out of the household because the mother has a boyfriend or a lover, or there may be a stepfather. They may see men in the community, in their neighborhoods, that are dealing drugs, that are violent. They don't always have the best male role models to look up to. The rapper Ice-T wrote a book, and it was an autobiography, and he said, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a drug dealer, a pimp, and a gangster, because when I looked around in my neighborhood, the men in my neighborhood, the strong men, the men that got what they wanted, that had the cars, that had the girls, that had the houses, that's what they were. They were gangsters, they were drug dealers, and they were pimps. He said, I didn't see a positive male role model until after I started getting into music and leaving my neighborhood. And that's what a lot of our boys are facing. They just don't have that male role model. We can't blame them. We can't scold them. And we can't excuse them, their behaviors. We need to show them that there is a stronger, better way to be a man, because they don't always have that experience. So where are they getting this? They get their identity as a male from TV, from sports stars and movies. What is it that's available to them to be a role model? And as a man, these are the role models that they're seeing. And I want to give you two examples. There's a rapper from Louisiana. His name is Lil Boosie, and he's actually in prison right now. His lyrics are violent. They're sexual in nature. They're derogatory towards women. They're derogatory towards authority. He's a gangster rapper. And I have a student, Juwan, who really likes his music. And so we sat down one day, and I said, Juwan, what do you like about his music? And he said, well, I like his feeling, his passion. He said, I like his lyrics. I like the beat. And I said, you know, Lil Boosie is not the best role model. That a lot of the things he's done are criminal, they're not positive, and basically they're not good things to do. And he said, oh, I totally understand that. I don't look up to him as a role model. I look up to his music as for what the music is itself, not him as a person. And I said, that's great. That's what I want you to understand. And that's something that we need to do. It's not bad for our children and our students, especially at the high school level, to idolize someone. But we want them to idolize these people for the right reasons. We want our students to look up to people for the right reasons. And this student proved that point for me. He said, I know what he does is wrong, and I don't want to do that. I just like his music. He was able to separate it. But what the good thing was is that I took the time to sit down with him to discuss that. When our students are watching TV, and I'm not big on popular culture TV, MTV has these shows, Jersey Shore and Teen Mom, and I'm not hip to that, but it's important that we sit down with our boys especially and say, okay, you see this on TV, what do you think about it? What's good, what's bad? To take that time to discuss it helps them to identify positive traits and negative traits. It allows them to develop a persona that is stronger and better for them as they grow up to be men. I had another student, Kendrick, who had to write an essay about someone that deserved to be on a stamp. And Kendrick decided that Michael Vick decided to be on a stamp. And I thought, okay, this Michael Vick, who was just released from prison, who was fighting dogs, who was involved with this group of people that was negative and impacted his life in a negative way. And I said, I don't know if I want him looking up to this athlete because of the negative things that he's done. But Kendrick wrote his essay, and when he was done, I read the essay. And he said he looked up to Michael Vick. Michael Vick deserved to be on a U.S. postage stamp because he had changed and become a better person. He had left behind the past that was negative, that caused him to go to jail, and was doing things now that was positive. He had changed his life to become a better person. He had persevered through troubling times. And this student, and I was amazed by it. I did not expect this from the student, and we sat down and we talked about it. It was so eye-opening to me that we want our students to be able to differentiate between the positive and the negative, and that's what they were doing. When we want our students to have positive role models. So a few things that I do with my students is I discuss these people that are popular in culture, that are popular in sports or on TV and music. And I say, what are the good qualities of this person? What's the good quality of being a dad? What's the good quality of being a husband? When we read novels, we're reading To Kill a Mockingbird. What makes Atticus Finch a strong person, a good father, a good role model? So that is where we can give these boys in high school those positive images of a positive male, is through discussion, through modeling, through our characters in literature, through our characters in history or in science. You know, what makes an animal a good father or a parent? What makes what made George Washington and our founding fathers positive influences on America and to the people of this country? What does Atticus Finch do that makes him a good father? Another thing that I do a lot, and this is from personal experience, and this is a personal decision, but I want to share with my students what I do as a father and what I do as a husband, because they do not see a father figure or a husband in their household when they go home at night. And I share with them. I tell them, if my wife and I get in an argument, I share it. I don't get too detailed, but I share it, and I say, this is how I handle it. This is how she handles it. This is what we do to resolve the situation. Because so many times the boy does not have that role model that teaches them, how do you handle this with your wife? How do you prevent this from becoming violent? How do you stay in a positive relationship without just running away? How do you discipline your children? How do you interact with your children? What does it mean to be a good father? I share stories about my son and daughter and the activities that we participate in. We go camping. I tell them what we did because they need to hear the positive role model, the positive aspects of being a father, of being a husband. Our boys need that, especially more than ever with the split households, with the stuff they see on TV and hear in music. If we can give them that, then we're doing our job as parents. Even if you're a female teacher, do that. Share your experiences. My husband did this, or my father did this, or this character did this. I know I'm kind of focusing on this, but I think that is the most important thing with working with high school boys. We're at the point where they're getting ready to go out in the world and become citizens of the world. We want them to understand what it takes to be a man in today's society, to be a leader, to be a father, to be a husband. We have to do that for our children. We have to do that for our boys. And we are the one place that they can come every day and see those positive aspects of being a father and a husband. Okay, I'll move on. So what are the things that I do in class? Here's how I deal with things in class. We mentioned earlier about the male brain being logical with the gross motor skills. Men's brains focus on processes, look at pictures. We're able to gather information and sort it through pictures and graphics and images. And our boys are no different. And Dr. Payne talks a lot about mental models and using pictures and analogies and stories and mental models to retain information in our students. One of the things that I do with my boys, especially the boys in that are struggling academically, is I use a lot of graphic organizers. Because this helps build in the student's mind how information should look, how things are organized. We use Venn diagrams. We use story maps. We use, if you look at Dr. Payne's workbooks, you'll see all these graphic organizers that help boys to retain this information. Let me give you an example of one that I used last week. We're trying to identify the thesis statement in different essays. And I said, you need to think of the essay as a big cow. So I drew a cow on the board. And they giggled because they, you know, how is a cow related to an essay? And I went around and I asked everyone, what's your favorite type of steak? And I got ribeye and T-bone and filet mignon. And I said, okay, what do you need to do in order to get that piece of the steak out of this cow? And they replied, we cut away everything, all the skin and the intestines and all of the things until we get down to that piece of meat. And I said, that's exactly how we identify a thesis statement. And that's exactly how we identify a main idea in an essay. We cut away everything until we get down to what is really being said, what the author is really trying to get across to us as the readers. Just that mental model. Every time since that we've talked about thesis statements, they talk about the cow. And that helps our boys to remember information, to process information. We want to allow our boys to work and think in their own way. And this is basically differentiated instruction. We want them to be able to use the skills that they have and the processes in their mind and the mental models they have to solve problems. Boys' brains are built to solve problems differently than females. Give them the tools and the skills, but allow them to use those tools and skills in a way that is best for them. At the high school level, this is important. We don't want to impose a specific way to do something on boys. We want to give them the tools to solve a problem. So we're not necessarily differentiating our lessons, our instruction. We're differentiating the response to that instruction, allowing students to develop their own ideas in their own ways. I have a student, Marquez, who's the former starting quarterback of our football team, and we were writing an essay about when teachers allow students to do things their own way, that they give them the tools and then allow them to do it their own way. Well, Marquez is a 16-year-old boy who comes from a very difficult household, very little support at home throughout his entire life. He likes to misbehave in class. He likes to talk. He likes to be the class clown. He doesn't want to stay focused. Well, we were working on this essay about teachers allowing you to become your own person, and he was not working on it. He was not working on it. And I sat down with him, and I used this example. I said, okay, Marquez, if you're playing football and you have a play drawn up where you're supposed to pass, but all your receivers are covered and you have a linebacker bearing down on you, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to scramble. And I said, would your coach be upset if you scrambled, if you ran with the ball? He said, no, he would want me to do what I think is best in that situation. And I said, Marquez, there is your essay. I said, your coach gives you the play. He gives you the practice and the tools to be successful in that play, but then he allows you to use your judgment in how you carry out that play. And he gives you the freedom to do what you think is best for your team. And I said, that's exactly what the essay is. What I did as a teacher there is I connected Marquez's learning to his life, but I also gave him a strategy, a tool that allowed him to write his essay. It connected, and he saw the connection between the two. That was the way that I connected with Marquez. And his essay is a work in progress, but he's doing very well. So use of graphic organizers, use of differentiated instruction to allow your high school boys to respond to situations in their own way is great for their academics. It gives them ownership over their learning. It encourages them to be critical thinkers. And that is really what we want our boys to become. Some other things. If you've heard Dr. Payne present or you've read A Framework for Understanding Poverty, one thing that she discusses is the idea that there's two sets of rules in life. There's rules for home, and then there's rules for work and school. And at home, you do what you need to do to survive. At school, we basically function from the middle class standards of life, the middle class rules. So I share this with my boys. My boys come from a pretty rough neighborhood in the community that we live in, most of them. And they have a lot of violence in the neighborhood, drugs, different problems that they go home to every single day. And I described to my boys, I said, I know that at home there's going to be times where you have to defend yourself, where you have to physically fight, where you have to speak in a certain way in order to survive at home. But at school it's different. At work it's different. I said, if another teacher came up to me and disagreed with something I said, I wouldn't physically attack this person. We would discuss it. On the street, if someone came and had a problem with me, then it might be a different situation. And I use this example, and I love it. And I say, imagine that I'm driving through your neighborhood, and I have a economy Honda Fit. It's a little tiny car, and I'm dressed up in a shirt and tie, and I'm this white guy driving through a predominantly African-American neighborhood at night in my little blue car. And I see two men on the side of the road. One is holding a baseball bat, and the other is holding a pipe. And they're screaming at each other, getting ready to become physical. And I stop my car, and I walk over, and I say, excuse me, gentlemen. I sense that there is a differing of opinions here, and I sense that you are both feeling anger towards one another, and this may result in physical violence that may impact your lives further down the road. And they laugh and giggle, and they say, if that's how you're going to talk to these two guys in our neighborhood getting ready to fight, then they're going to turn on you, and you're going to be the victim. And I said, exactly. There's a way to handle things at home that you have to do. At school, and there's two students getting ready to fight, that's how I will handle it, because at school we don't fight. And this helps them. And I also share the example of you cannot use football rules when you play basketball. You can. It'd be really funny, I think, to watch, but it's not going to work. And this connects with the boys as well. They need to understand that at home, when they're around their buddies, there's a certain way that you talk. There's a certain way that you communicate and act. But that is not the case in school and in work. And if we can give them those rules and teach them those rules and help them understand that, when they get ready to go to college or they get ready to enter the workforce or the military once they graduate, they have those skills and the understanding that these two different set of rules apply, and I'm going to need to know both of them. Neither is right, neither is wrong. They're just used at two different times. One of the biggest things that I've learned from my high school boys and my son Jack is that boys need space. Boys need room to move about. Boys fidget. Boys are not prone to sit still silently staring at the board and rapt attention to our lesson every single day. It's not feasible. That's not how men's brains are built. That's not how we are built as humans. We can think of our perfect student, a student that sits straight and listens and gives us full attention and focuses on us visually throughout the entire lesson and asks questions. And boys can hear. Boys can understand, boys can comprehend and take in this information, but they don't necessarily need to be sitting there staring straight at us. That's not how they're built. They need space. And my son Jack, he likes to move around when they have carpet time in the classroom, and he fidgets and he you know, switches from sitting on one leg to the other leg to Indian style to his knees. And I've seen a lot of teachers where they say, Jack, you need to sit still. You need to stop moving. You need to stop fidgeting. And I say to myself, and I was like that at one point in my career, and I said, what does it matter? If Jack is listening and Jack is hearing me, then does it matter if he fidgets a little bit? So when I entered the high school classroom and I have my boys that are tapping their pencils, that are slouching in their seats a little bit, that sit a little bit sideways in their chair, that are prone to take up more room, I said, I can get on them and I can reprimand them for moving or from sitting at different angles or from having to tap a pencil or get up every once in a while to go sharpen their pencil. I can get on them, but that's not going to solve any problems. I can give them an office referral and they'll be sent to the office and be punished there, but then they're out of my classroom. These boys can learn. They are listening. They are comprehending. They just need a little bit of space to move around. Furthermore, they need to be able to get up when they need to. They need to be able to go to the bathroom if they need to. Now, I'm not saying in the middle of a lesson, but we need to change our mindset as teachers to allow their need for movement, for their need for space. I know which students, which boys in my classroom from the first day are going to need a table all to themselves or are going to need to be put towards the side of the classroom where they have a little bit more room to move about. It's a very simple change that can make a big difference as far as behavior goes in your classroom. If they feel they have the space to move around a little bit, to slide their chair back, to sit at an angle, that's not a negative thing. That's just their need for space. We need to allow for that small movement. If I have a student, we'll go back to Kendrick. Kendrick needs a little bit of space to move around in my class. He cannot sit straight up at a desk and face forward. Now, we can expect that of him, but is it reasonable? Do we do that all the time wherever we are? So with Kendrick, I said, look, you can have this table. I said, you can sit at an angle. You can move your chair or tap a pencil or do what you need to do. but it must be confined to this space. I'll give you more space, but you need to, your part of the agreement is that you remain in this space. And that a plan like that with the boys in my classroom has made a huge difference as far as movement, being out of the seat, interrupting class, because they say, okay, he's respecting me enough to give me a little bit more space. Now I'm going to respect him by staying in the space that he's given me. So something like that is just a quick and simple way that you can work with your boys to help with their behavior in the classroom. We also want to allow them to see and hear. Sometimes a boy's vision and hearing is not as developed as quickly as females. Boys tend to need to be closer to the board to hear. This isn't a part of the behavior plan, it's just their simple need to be able to see, and they need to be able to hear what is happening in the classroom. That doesn't mean I put all my girls in the back and all the boys in the front. I really make observations as to what works for certain students and what they need. But giving them that space, that area in the classroom where they can see and hear, is highly important. And one more thing is boys like to work in groups. All students love to work in groups. But with boys, boys tend to see who the alpha male is if they're working in groups. They try to see who the big dog is that's going to take control and dictate what happens in that group. And usually it's the boy that is the loudest, the strongest physically, the most popular. And that's not always good for the groups. So a couple of things that we can do. Heterogeneously mix our groups so that there's boys and girls. That really depends on the dynamics of your classroom. Another thing that you can do is assign roles in the classroom when they're working in groups. Have a lead, have a speaker, have a recorder, have a communicator, have a materials person. While that seems elementary in a lot of ways for our high school boys, by giving that task, we are eliminating that search for the alpha male. And that's what is effective about working in groups with boys, is that they want to work in groups, they want to be on teams, they want to work with one another and have that time to communicate. But they need some type of structure for that to be effective. So seating and space is an important thing for our boys. Look at your boys, see what they need. Take a few minutes just to observe the boys in your classroom and say, okay, what can I do for this student that will make it a little bit easier for them? Praising boys is the next topic I'd like to discuss. I've noticed that especially my boys from poverty, I do not want to call them out for doing something academically well. I don't, if a student gets a 100 on a test, calling him out in front of his buddies, I may think, wow, I'm giving him positive praise. He'll like this. He'll do more for me because I'm praising him. If I do it in front of his peer group, he almost tends to feel like, okay, I'm not as strong because I'm not as tough because I do well in school. My boys expect me to be a certain way, act a certain way, and now that they know I'm doing good in school, they're going to think I'm a sissy or I'm not as tough as I really am. So what I do is I will catch them outside of class on the way in, on the way out. If we're working in groups or we're working individually, I'll quietly go up to them and praise them. Great job, Darius, on that quiz today. You did a fantastic job. My speech class today, we had a student that gave a speech, and he did a fantastic job. As we were leaving class, I just pulled him aside, and I said, great job. Big smile, big eyes. He was so excited and happy. But if I had done that in front of his peers, they would have said, he's not as tough because he's good in school. There's a stereotype that to be a man, to be a boy, to be strong, you can't be good in school. You need to be physical. You need to be tough. However, by giving them that praise quietly, he's more likely to say, I'm going to keep doing well so I get this praise. My buddies don't need to know that I'm getting straight A's all the time. Or if they do, it's up to me to share it with them. If we do it, sometimes it hurts their image, and we don't want to do that. Because to boys, no matter what we do, their image is still important. I think one of the most important things working with boys at any age is time. We need to be understanding of boys' time. Boys need to process. Men need to process. If your child comes home, your son comes home, and he's upset about something at school, and he walks in the door and we can sense he's upset, we say, you know, what's wrong, Timmy? What's wrong? What happened? Tell me. I'm here for you. Tell me. And we nag him and nag him and nag him. He's just going to get angrier and angrier and angrier, run in his room, slam the door, completely shut down. It's not that he doesn't want to communicate with us. It's not that he doesn't want to share with us. He just needs time to go into that room in his mind, to unlock the feelings room in his mind, think about it, process it, and then maybe later he'll come and approach us to talk about it. So one of the things that I really do with my boys and my son and the boys in my high school classes is I allow them time. If I sense that they come in at the beginning of class and they're upset, I may say, is everything okay? And they'll shake their head or say no or, yeah, it's fine. And I always say to them in a quiet voice, if you need anything, if you want to talk, I'm here. Come to me at any time. Catch me at lunch. Catch me after class or after school. And it just allows them the time to process. And you'd be surprised at how many times later in the day they'll come back to you and talk to you about it because they've had time to process it and sort their feelings and sort their emotions. And as long as I'm continuously reminding them that I am there for them to talk, to communicate, then they'll be more likely to share with me. You know, just do not pressure them. If we pressure them, if we get on them, if we nag them, then they're more likely to shut down and block us out. Another thing with our high school boys is if they're having a bad day, if they come in and something's happened at home or something's happened with a friend or a girlfriend, they're going to come in and they're going to be in bad moods and they're not going to be ready to learn. And too often I've seen teachers, and I'm guilty of this myself, we get on to that student about they need to be working, you need to get on task, you need to get to work, you need to do this. If you don't do this, this is going to happen. There are oftentimes I can sense when a boy comes in my room that something's going on. I say, why don't you go get a drink of water or go to the bathroom, or why don't you sit in the back of the class for a little while and just take a breather, and then when you're ready to work, come back up front. And I've heard a lot of great different things that teachers have done. One teacher at our school here has a little chair in the back with, it's got some lotion and some water, and the students can go back to that area if they need 5 or 10 minutes to gather themselves, just a place to calm down, let the oxygen flow to their brain, and once they're calm and a little bit more focused, then they can come back and work with the class. Little things like that, giving boys time to process, to disengage, to focus. I'd rather do that for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes in class than have a 90-minute block or a 50-minute block of time wasted because this boy and I got into an argument or I didn't give this boy the chance to disengage, to calm down, to breathe, and to process their feelings and emotions. That's a key thing to remember. A lot of these things, well, I don't have time for that. I'm in a state-tested area. I don't have time to do this. I have too much to do. I think of it this way. If I don't do that, if I don't give them time to do that, then I may lose them for the entire class period. And think about what a waste of time that would be. I know we're running up on 11:45, so I just want to come up with, I want to give you a few more things before we go. Our students are going to look up to us, and they're going to look to us as role models, as we discussed before. One of the things that I do is I allow my boys and my girls, they write in a journal, and 2 days a week they can write about anything they want. And I was amazed at what I heard from some of these boys. I had a student in an English class last year. He was disruptive in class. He was unfocused. He wasn't doing his work. And I read his journal during this week that he was having a hard time staying focused in class. And his father had just been sentenced to 25 years to life in the state penitentiary. Now, without that, he never came to me. He never told me. He hadn't told anyone that this had happened to his father. It was through this journal, this non-threatening place that he could share what was going on in his life, then he was able to communicate those feelings to me or communicate what was going on. Now, that changes the whole situation. I understand what's going on. I understand he needs something more than I was giving him. He needs a little bit more space. He needs a little bit more time. He needs someone to talk to. So journals are just a great way to really learn about our students, and it helps us to understand what's going on in their lives. Maybe there's a reason behind this behavior. Maybe there's a reason that they haven't got any homework done this week. Maybe there's a reason that they're acting the way they are in class. So journals, allowing them that non-threatening place to share their feelings. My last point is, with high school boys, the most important thing, besides being positive role models, is to connect with these students somehow. Connect with them. Show interest in their lives. I don't keep up with TV, but I try to keep up with trends in music and the singers and the rappers and the groups. I try to keep up with that somewhat. Doesn't mean I like it all, but I try to keep up with it so that I have something to talk to some of these students about. Some of these students are involved in church in our community, and that's really important with them. And I just say, you know, how is church this weekend? You know, do you have anything going on at church? How was the game last night? Did you win? How did you play? I heard the band has a performance coming up this weekend. What's going on with that? You know, tell me how you're doing with that. Find something to try to connect with your boys, because if they see you as a human being, if they see you as a positive person that they can come to in times of need, then you're going to become a more effective teacher, and you're going to make a bigger difference in their lives. I'm telling you, the biggest thing that to me is to just find that little thing that you can talk with your students about. What is it that they like? What is it that they're interested in? What is it that's going on? Find something about every one of your students, one little thing where if you pass them in the hall sometime during the week, you can just mention it. Or if you see them after class, just mention it anytime you can. Just that little connection will make a huge difference, that relationship that you're building through being a positive role model for connecting with their lives. Those things build the relationships that our boys need more than academics, more than behavior management plans, more than counseling. The one thing these boys need is a connection with some type of a positive adult, whether it's male or female, a coach, a counselor, a member of the community, a member of the church, or a teacher. These boys, more than anything, need some positive connection with a positive adult every day. And that will make the biggest difference. There's a lot that I left out, but I think we covered a lot, and I hope you got some ideas, and we're going to see if there's any questions at this point. And I thank you all for attending on this Friday.
Let's see. I don't have any questions yet, and so I'll just remind everybody that if you've got a question for Vinny, to please email that to us at questions@ahaprocess.com. So that's questions with an S on the end at ahaprocess.com. And we would be happy to receive your questions and Vinny would be happy to respond to them. Vinny, if you've got another nugget or two for us, that'd be wonderful. We'll see if any questions come in the meantime.
Sure. One of the things that I didn't talk about is when boys become emotional and something's going on, men don't always have the words to communicate those feelings. Our boys in poverty may not have those abstract words to formulate a cohesive thought about what's going on in their lives or be able to communicate with that. Men don't always have those feeling words, because so often we fall back to that stereotype that men need to be tough, big boys don't cry. It's a guy thing. But if we can develop those feeling words with our students, it helps to allow them to communicate. Paul Slocum, who wrote Hear Our Cry, Boys in Crisis, suggests that you have some type of word bank where you have those emotional words that they can share, that they can learn to share their feelings and emotions with, and that's just an easy way to do it. I also use those emotional words. I tell the students, I love my wife, I love my kids. You know, I share those emotions so they can hear that vocabulary. I felt angry when, or I sense that you're upset today. If we model those words and we teach them those words, then they're able to communicate their thoughts and feelings a little bit better. a lot of this comes from my personal observation, but a lot of it also comes from the book, Hear Our Cry, Boys in Crisis, by Dr. Paul Slocum. And you can, that book is available. The workshops are available to work with your teachers. And it's a great resource for you to have to understand how a boy's mind works, which is probably the most important thing. And then with that new information, what can you do to help our boys be successful? So I really think y'all should pick up the book. I'm not promoting it just because I work for the company. I just think it's an awesome resource to have. And as a teacher, I know it helped me immensely to gain an understanding of my boys.
Vinny, when you mentioned the word bank, what exactly is that?
It is a feeling wheel. If you look up the term, if you Google the term feeling wheel, it's mm-hmm. a wheel that someone came up with. I cannot remember the lady's name, but it just has all the different emotion, feeling words, anger, sadness, happy, violent, glad, depressed. All those words that a student may not be used to hearing, that may not know at all or may not know how to use, it's literally something that you can print out, and it has these different feeling words on there to help students develop that vocabulary. I'm 99% sure it's called the feeling wheel, and you can Google it, and you can print that out. And it just helps our boys develop those words that they need in order to be successful.
Absolutely. If they've never seen someone model that, with some words, don't even know what they mean necessarily if you haven't had them in your life. It's wonderful to give them that kind of resource and to be able to tie it to, that's how I'm feeling.
Right. And it also helps them to identify their, like you just said, identify these feelings. What is it? I'm so used to hearing negative emotions at home,
mm-hmm.
anger words and sad words. What are my positive words? How do I label this feeling? And now once I have a label for it, a name for it, what can I do to solve it? And I think that's important, for our boys especially, to be able to identify what it is that they're feeling, and then what can I do about it? What strategies do I need to solve this or to make this a better situation if needed?
I know that in my work with boys that giving them that space that you mentioned earlier is just absolutely, it makes a world of difference. To give them that time to process and to access that information, when you say that there are different rooms in their brains, that's such a great visual and really helps us to understand why, they don't right away know how they're feeling.
Right.
They've got to have some time to process.
I'll share this. In my household, it's the total opposite with my wife. I'm the one that is always sharing the feelings and feeling the need to discuss our emotions and feelings, and she's more stoic and fits the stereotype of a male more, where she needs time to think about it and process it. I grew up with mostly women around me that were very emotional. My 85-year-old Italian grandmother is a very emotional person, and so I always had that emotion in my life. So when Shelley and my wife and I get in a discussion or an argument, or I'm always, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's going on? And she's like, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then a few days later, she'll say, this is what I was feeling. This is what I was thinking. And, it's funny just because it's the opposite of what we normally see.
Right. But thank goodness there's one of you in the relationship, right?
No. One of us thinks and another one just reacts.
Well, wonderful. There have been no questions, but sometimes people need time to process and think about it. And so if you are hit with a question, in another half hour or something, please do email us at questions@ahaprocess.com, and we will forward that to Vinny and get an answer for you. So, Vinny, thank you so much for taking the time and giving us this wonderful teleseminar on boys. It's so helpful to understand a little bit more about the why they're acting mm-hmm. in such a way and how to help them out. So thank you very much.
I appreciate everyone joining us today, and it was a pleasure to be with you all.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you all next month. Bye-bye.